telling you never. Ones coming to the place are not particularly interested in breeding, how you do it, what you do, or what you do it with. Now, this is pure and simple mind control, mind warping, and misfocusing and distraction. That kind of physical approach is always from adversarial resources. And this is hoopla, hype, that gets attention of readers and people. This is what man, human man, wishes to play around with, not what aliens would be interested in coming to your place. So you have to know that this is part of the big program. And I just can only offer that unto you, that you're going to have to pay very close attention, go within reason, and truly ask yourself if God and hosts and advanced knowledgeable beings would remotely consider doing and behaving in the manner projected in these volumes of incredibly stupid literature. I am insulted that man would even begin to pay attention to it. This is part of the elite adversarial, distracting, misleading, right down the line of programming, of intent according to the plan. This next is so important that it becomes the reason that I have chosen to write or speak in this manner.
Please stop it. I don't want to pass over the opportunity to discuss aliens a little bit. It's the time of coming at you with every kind of story that there is. Please, I haven't monitored the thing, but I imagine you're going to get a nice dose when? Tomorrow? Oh, does anybody know what time and what channel? Well, don't anybody miss those intruders. They're interested in breeding, so watch out. I have to talk about these things because at least a tenth of the inquiries that I do get revolve around ones like Spielberg and George Lucas, etc. How could they be gifted enough to make motion pictures that seem realistic? Well, because they have been exposed to the truth along with all the hype. And I will tell you how really genuine their interest is. When we wrote Sipapu, and after we had been in this community, I, Hatton, made a tape for Steven Spielberg, George Lucas, Shirley MacLaine, Mrs. Spielberg, Amy Irving, Mr. and Mrs. Paul Newman, and others, but I don't remember. Because these ones all said to God early on, let me be successful and I will be ready whenever you call me Father. The only one really ready is Robert Redford. And he's not sure, but he's sure ready to do something. The tape of introduction and explanation went with a copy of Sipapu Odyssey, saying this motion picture will be made, and it will be made to the tune of some $40 million investment. Therefore, we are not even asking that you volunteer your time. We really were not interested in volunteers because very often the kind of volunteering they do is too expensive. All of Mr. Spielberg's came back. Shirley MacLaine ended up with some 3 or 4 copies because of Dennis Weaver and his wife Jerry, who hand-delivered them, and Gabriel Green, a friend of ours, took her another one. And she sends her regular greetings to Commander Hatton. So we get on all right. Isn't it interesting what kind of response you get from man when he's got the real thing in his hand? Very interesting to see how this will come right down the tubes. It's going to be made. I want Fawn to have a message. I put her in the motion picture and she will be accepted because she is almost a duplicate for the one that I have chosen to play the lead role. We're going to have a lot of fun before we're done. We're going to shed a lot of tears before we're done. And the world is going to wonder what hit it before we're done. So let's hold together. Let's not fall apart. And let's begin to come in from all these myriads of questions, of details, even like the next one, that is extremely important. And it's important because of its subject matter, so that at some point we're going to get over church doctrines. We must get over church doctrines. I don't care what church you go to. I only care about your relationship to God. And don't come to me trying to convince me that your way is correct because you go to some church and the doctrines say this, that, or the other. I don't know those churches. I don't care about those churches. I stand in the presence of God. I travel with the Christ. Returning to your place, I am head of the host. Come back again. And you don't know which end of yourself is even up. I mean it literally. You do not know whether or not you are encapsulated within a place called Earth, and what you see in the skies is but the atmosphere within a capsule. Or is this particular universe big enough to include Pleiades and you're upside down? God is smart enough to project in his thought manifestation you being right side up and in a pressurized situation, even in a space shuttle built in the United States of America with all its flaws, can pressurize a cabin so that man can walk upright without floating around and bumping his head and having the hairdo flop in the face of the fellow traveler. Wouldn't you think they could get a nice one-piece suit that would contain them? Is spaceman that far ahead of you? No. He's not, precious ones, and that better scare the living daylights out of you. That is the sort of drivel they give to you, the people. The ones actually perform in skin-tight suits. There isn't any lint in the filters, and they can pulverize your Earth. And I'm not talking about space aliens from Pleiades. or Zeta 1, Zeta 2, reticulum. I'm not talking about ones from Orion. I am talking about ones from the United States of America and Soviet Russia. And most of all, England. The next subject is very important because it comes in humble inquiry from Utah, from one who is obviously very indoctrinated in the Mormon religion, finding great discomfort in the contradictions, and actually wanting me to just say, hey, no, this is evil. They've just said you're evil, Mr. Hatton, but now come on and tell me that this bunch is evil. They're not evil. Is your local corner Mason evil? Use your heads. This is used to control man. And I have to go on what I've said all along. Without deviation, without hesitation, I'm of God. I'm not interested in your man-made doctrines. God gave you a set of guidelines, and now they're even carved into stone to last for eternity. And yet, the stone on a manifested illusion will not last into eternity, will it? It will just keep turning up every time it's manifest. Every time God wants to project these same truths to you, he will give you another monument, and sometimes going to be the same one. Because as your illusion dissolves, you will have nothing to fall back on except your spiritual reality. You are moving into reality and away from the lie and the sham of the experience. You must understand it. This is why you have to make a transition as part human into the spiritual, because someone has to put out his hand and say, come on this way. Even if you don't understand it, come on this way. The other way traps you into the illusion from whence you cannot escape. And when you make that transition from that stance and that standpoint, you're going to go into the same ignorance that you have experienced already. Let's not let that happen. But let's go ahead and respond to some of these questions. This man has pored over his books. And I finally, well, actually, Oberle, I do have it a little bit out of order. I'm really not interested, you see, in the one in between. I really am not. But once again, it is another compassionate plea for some understanding about another leader. And so I had to give some time to it too. And this is the one called Maitreya that is supposedly living in physical form in London somewhere. And I don't care. Maitreya simply means God, Sananda, deity, whatever you want to call it. And yet he supposedly, according to Benjamin Krim, is back and living in London and will manifest himself as the God when he's ready to make that known. So I had dealt with that one in between the prior subject and the Mormon Church. So I guess there's nothing to do but go on now with Maitreya, not meaning to be demeaning to this one or to anyone Maitreya. I am not going to make your decisions for you. You decide. You must decide what is valid and what is invalid. If it be a physical claiming to be spiritual, it's going to be invalid. Use your guidelines. And that guideline is written within your soul.
because I want to have Dorma be allowed to experience this the same as you ones in the room. And I will ask that it be put to print also at some point here. But I don't want to deal with it in print for the paper today, for instance. I want to read along here because I now have a paper that, well, it was sent to me some time back, but I just have not had an opportunity to deal with it. It comes from Canada, and I would just like to take it up. I will read portions of it, then we will comment. I will ask you to stop and think about things as we go. I will tell you that it is about Maitreya and what is projected regarding a being called Maitreya. And I can start off by just giving you some highlights as listed of Maitreya's public emergence, if in fact it would have been truth. I will show you how it cannot be as is projected here, but always ones have to utilize reason in every given situation, always remembering that any being of such high power, if you will, as a god, in the terminology utilized or definition of terminology utilized as we utilize Sananda or God or Creator or any of these other very high referenced labels for deity, they can project themselves in any form they choose. However, you're going to have to keep in mind, and this is going to be a direct contradiction to what you're going to hear now. I tell you as a forerunner come with the Christed being, having arrived at his, quote, goddom. I think that's an interesting term, G-O-D. D-O-M. Isn't that very close to God damn? Isn't that an interesting thought for you to ponder a little bit? It says here that on May 14th, 1982, Benjamin Krim reveals during a press conference in Los Angeles that Maitreya lives in the Asian community in London and challenges the media to invite the world teacher to come forward. The media do not respond. July 31st, 1985, 22 journalists representing the media of East and West gather in the East End of London, hoping for contact with Maitreya or his representative. This belated interest from the media makes it possible at last for Maitreya to take the steps that will finally culminate in his declaration. Well, it doesn't say what happened. August 1987, Benjamin Krim announces that in the coming 3 or 4 months, Maitreya will be working intensively to bring about a breakthrough in international relationships in the world. Less than a month later, in September, the Americans and the Soviets meet, and in December, reach an armaments agreement that no one had thought possible. Beginning in 1988, Maitreya appears, both in person and in dreams, to well-known leaders in various countries and to many ordinary citizens. World detente and the release of tension which ensues allows more open signs of his presence. Manifestations of crosses of light are reported in the American media and are seen by many thousands. On June 11th, Maitreya appears in Nairobi, Kenya, and is photographed addressing thousands of people who instantly recognized him as the Christ. April 1988, one of Maitreya's close associates in the Asian community of London, began giving interviews to two journalists. Their articles, which are provided to Share International magazine and released to the world's media, outlines Maitreya's teachings and draws attention to world development and events which he expects to take place both in the short and long term. April 1990, a major conference is initiated by Maitreya in London. Some 200 dignitaries from around the world attend, including diplomats, royalty, church leaders, and journalists, all of whom had met with him previously. The general media are invited to attend as observers. About 30 journalists do so. Maitreya speaks of his mission, teachings, and plans. Those attending the conference are invited to return to their respective countries and speak openly about their experience. Wow, that last one really does it, doesn't it? It is not that ones would not be summoned. It is that I want you to listen again. 200 dignitaries from around the world attend, including diplomats, royalty, church leaders, and journalists. Are there only 200 in your world who would go? Is God coming back just to dignitaries, royalty, and church leaders? Does this really sound like something God would do? Well, perhaps. But I don't know of very many leaders, royal or otherwise, who could simply be summoned, nor would they show up. So we have to look at it reasonably, what they mean here. So let us just go now and read from the document. He's back. He has been expected for generations by all of the major religions. Christians know him as the Christ and expect his imminent return. Actually, Christians, as represented here in this terminology, is incorrect. Because Christians, as you have become, are expecting Jesus, the one called Christed. It goes on, and expect his imminent return. The Jews await him as the Messiah. The Hindus look for the coming of Krishna. Buddhists expect him as Maitreya Buddha. The Muslims anticipate the Imam Mahdi. The names may be different, but they all designate the same one, the world teacher, whose personal name is Maitreya. Well, I would suggest that Maitreya does have meaning. It basically has the same meaning as Christ or God or Sananda, but I have to remind you, those terms are terms related to state of being and are not proper names, such as Isu, Jesus, Emmanuel, George, Joe, Sam, or Tut. So your authors, if nothing else, are misinformed. The names, as it says here, represent the same one, the world teacher, and so forth. And it goes on to say that he returns now at the beginning of the age of Aquarius as the teacher and guide for those of every religion and those of no religion. Now that could well be, because as God returns, it certainly is going to be the latter, although the term age of Aquarius is a new age term and is not sent forth of God. That is a coined phrase utilized by New Age movement. Now, It goes on. Concerned primarily about the economic, political, and social imbalances in the world today, do you really think that God would return basically and primarily concerned about economics, politics, and social imbalances? God is interested in your soul. These other things we are sent to attend and point out to you to allow you to know what has come to be and why. Sananda is interested, this God returned, is interested in your soul and your coming into knowledge and balance with the truth of your beingness. It goes on. He will first launch a call to action to save the millions of people who starve to death every year in a world of plenty. No, he will not. God will not. God has come in reference to your souls. And through man, if there is going to be a turnabout and a saving of any millions of people who starve to death every year, man will attend it. He will then show humanity the way to regenerate itself and to anchor brotherhood and peace in the world by creating a civilization based on sharing, justice, and cooperation. His presence is our guarantee that there would be no Third World War. Oh, precious ones. Oh, I'm incensed. I will just go on. Nevertheless, it is humanity itself which must make the required changes and fashion the saner and more just world the Christ will inspire us to create. Well, let us hope that the last statement could in fact be some kind of truth. I just have to go on. We'll discuss this a bit later in the meeting. Information about the Christ's emergence has come primarily from Benjamin Krim, a British artist and exotericist who has been speaking and writing about this event since 1975. According to Krim, Maitreya, the Christ, descended in July 1977 from his ancient retreat in the Himalayas and took up residence in the Asian community of London. There he lives and works as a seemingly ordinary man, his true status known to relatively few. He has been emerging gradually into full public view so as not to infringe humanity's free will. Both in your books of instruction, regardless of the tampering, has come a truth which says, if any man comes proclaiming himself to be Christ and comes in physical format, he is not who he says himself to be. He is false. I suggest all of you go look it up. I'm not going to read any more about it. I'm going to repeat to you that which I have given you over and over and over again. There will be many teachers, some valid, many false. The point is, from your teachers, be it Maitreya, be it Ramtha, Mafu, Lazarus, whoever, Sathya Sai Baba, precious ones, I am not here to judge those ones. Each teacher will bring truth, and if teachers bring falseness, it must be you who discerns. I am not come to go down the list and blacklist or gold list teachers. Mine is to bring you information, documentation, and resources where you can go, and if you study, you don't need to ask these questions. Because according to the guidelines as given forth through the generations of time, according to the principles of life, cosmic and universal truth and law, the law of creation and the law of God, you can know. You question me about another one. Question that other one as to why he may be the one. Question Benjamin Krim and require that they put into balance some of the things that are not of the teachings. I'm going to move now into the subject that I really wanted to cover, because I have a reader and he has read, I believe, more than one of the books. But I must first read his letter to you, and I'll briefly do that. And then we will try to take these subjects one at a time and come into some kind of balance, because this one has sent great backup material. It begins, "Dear Hatton, after reading one of your books, I had several questions arise. I was told by one of your followers that your teachings were in compliance with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, to which I am a member. I do not find this to be the case, but would be interested in your response to several basic differences that I ran across. First of all, I respond to that. I would hope that my teachings are in compliance with any truth of God brought forth in any religious order. I find that we even have teachers of ministers. We have Catholic priests. We have ministers of almost all denominations, and they find no exception to what I bring. Therefore, if there is a finding, and you have read all of the material, and you still find contradiction or no explanation for the contradiction in our work, then I am open for further communication. And in this case, although this person has not read and studied at all, I find it a good opportunity to begin to handle some of these religious doctrine questions. I would hope that it does not ruin a friendship. I am not in the religious business. We don't have a doctrine as laid forth for church operations. We don't need mediators. You need the truth, and you need God. And that's all. In one of your journals, I read where Paul was an enemy to Jesus and to his teachings. And they were false, and these teachings would lead us away from the truth. Also, that's exactly right. I don't believe that you will find a single contradiction that says Paul was an arch enemy of Jesus. Paul, in fact, after Jesus quote, unquote, departure from the Holy Land in whatever way. We won't argue ascension or living or death or immortality or anything. We're just going to take the facts, sir. Paul, who was Saul of Tarsus, was a outspoken, miserable, mean enemy of this Christed being, the one often called the Christos, still called the Christos in Spanish and many languages about your world. His name was Isu Emmanuel. It was not Jesus. It was not Jesus. It was not Yeshua. It was Isu Emmanuel. It could have been pronounced according to the language pronunciation in any of these places. But I tell you, it was not Jesus. Jesus was the label appended to that being by Paul after the fact. As Paul traveled through Greece, he began to refer to and call this person that he had encountered and who had been his enemy. He called him Jesus. This is all right. Do you understand? If you call me George, or you call me Ray, or you call me Bob, or you call me Doris, it doesn't matter. I will respond to the energy flow that you produce when you call me. Me, hat on. I can't function exactly like you when I am in the position I'm in at this moment. And therefore, you must understand that I respond to an energy flow, a frequency that summons me. And names, as such, have very little importance. But look what you have done. You have made the name of this man the important point. If you do not believe on Jesus, you're lost. So what you are doing is saying, I believe in the teachings of Saul of Tarsus, who called himself Paul and named this man Jesus. And you have based your teachings not on Jesus, but on the word as Paul interpreted them to be. And if you are a biblical scholar, you will be able to go back, even if you're not a scholar. But if you listen to the multitudes of interpretations of what Paul might have meant here, and here, and there, you will get as many interpretations as there are people to produce them. This is fact. You can look it up in the historical documents. You see, what you once do is then take this same book that I tell you has been tampered with according to the needs of man. I do not tell you that all of it is invalid, that you should throw it away. I tell you to take each thing and reason it. Who does it serve? What does it serve? You have given me, precious one, for instance, Luke 18:12. I fast twice in the week. I give tithes of all that I possess. What does that mean? What does that mean? Why do you fast? Why did he fast? Give tithes of all that I possess. To whom? To whom do you give these tithes? You are talking of physical. A tithe is physical, usually. It is monetary in value. If you had gold nuggets and you had 10 of them and you gave one of them of equal value to the others away as a tithe, to whom do you give it? It requires another physical being to pick it up and take it. Now let us take the Mormon church, because this is the church in point. I take no exception to that. I just want to know, to whom do you Mormons tithe? What does it merit ye? Do you do it in the secret, quiet places, without anyone knowing? How does one know you tithe? If in fact part of the ritual or regulations are closed to you if you do not do these things. God chose to accept the widow's mite. And he has said in the Bible to give in secret, so that the heart would be in honesty. Is that what is done in the church? Is this what is done in the Episcopal Church, the Pentecostal Church, the Methodist Church? Or do they, as members, ask you to sign a pledge so they can plan their budget? And what is their budget for? It's for God, is it? It is for church building. It is for a kindergarten class. It is for materials. It is for the electric bill of the pastor. I do not object to these things, but don't tell me you are tithing and serving God. You are giving it into the hands of a committee or another man. Do you see? God says he judges by your works. Well, I suppose it works as a work to pull the money from your pocket and give it. And do not misunderstand what I am saying, because this can be the most worthy gift a person can give. I heard an evangelist pleading for send money, send money, send money. And he said, don't promise God something from your lottery. If you let me win the lottery, I will give you half. It's not what you might have. It's what you do with a dollar and a quarter in your pocket. Well, he's right and he is wrong. It is neither. It is the intent within the heart that has any merit at all to God. If you give from the dollar and a quarter in your pocket in hostility, and in expectation of getting reward some way. You see, God asks you to give in expectation of no reward, but the promise is always that you will receive in like manner. And if you give in hostility, you won't receive in gracious love, will you? You will receive in like manner, and perhaps that would be quite stingy in its return. telling you never. One's coming to the place or not particularly interested in breeding, how you do it, what you do, or what you do it with. Now, this is pure and simple mind control, mind warping, and misfocusing and distraction. That kind of physical approach is always from adversarial resources. And this is hoopla, hype, that gets attention of readers and people. This is what man, human man, wishes to play around with, not what aliens would be interested in coming to your place. So you have to know that this is part of the big program. And I just can only offer that unto you, that you're going to have to pay very close attention, go within reason, and truly ask yourself if God and hosts and advanced knowledgeable beings would remotely consider doing and behaving in the manner projected in these volumes of incredibly stupid literature. I am insulted that man would even begin to pay attention to it. This is part of the elite adversarial distracting, misleading, right down the line of programming of intent according to the plan. This next is so important that it becomes the reason that I have chosen to write or speak in this manner.
Please stop it. I don't want to pass over the opportunity to discuss aliens a little bit. It's the time of coming at you with every kind of story that there is. Please, I haven't monitored the thing, but I imagine you're going to get a nice dose when tomorrow. Oh, does anybody know what time and what channel? Well, don't anybody miss those intruders. They're interested in breeding, so watch out. I have to talk about these things because at least a tenth of the inquiries that I do get revolve around ones like Spielberg and George Lucas, etc. How could they be gifted enough to make motion pictures that seem realistic? Well, because they have been exposed to the truth along with all the hype. And I will tell you how really genuine their interest is. When we wrote Sipapu, and after we had been in this community, I, Hatton, made a tape for Steven Spielberg, George Lucas, Shirley MacLaine, Mrs. Spielberg, Amy Irving, Mr. and Mrs. Paul Newman, and others, but I don't remember. Because these ones all said to God early on, let me be successful and I will be ready whenever you call me Father. The only one really ready is Robert Redford. And he's not sure. But he's sure ready to do something. The tape of introduction and explanation went with a copy of Sipapu Odyssey, saying this motion picture will be made, and it will be made to the tune of some $40 million investment. Therefore, we are not even asking that you volunteer your time. We really were not interested in volunteers because very often the kind of volunteering they do is too expensive. All of Mr. Spielberg's came back. Shirley MacLaine ended up with some 3 or 4 copies because of Dennis Weaver and his wife Jerry, who hand-delivered them, and Gabriel Green, a friend of ours, took her another one. And she sends her regular greetings to Commander Hatton. So we get on all right. Isn't it interesting what kind of response you get from man when he's got the real thing in his hand? Very interesting to see how this will come right down the tubes. It's going to be made. I want Fawn to have a message. I put her in the motion picture and she will be accepted because she is almost a duplicate for the one that I have chosen to play the lead role. We're going to have a lot of fun before we're done. We're going to shed a lot of tears before we're done. And the world is going to wonder what hit it before we're done. So let's hold together. Let's not fall apart. And let's begin to come in from all these myriads of questions, of details, even like the next one. That is extremely important, and it's important because of its subject matter, so that at some point we're going to get over church doctrines. We must get over church doctrines. I don't care what church you go to. I only care about your relationship to God. And don't come to me trying to convince me that your way is correct because you go to some church and the doctrines say this, that, or the other. I don't know those churches. I don't care about those churches. I stand in the presence of God. I travel with the Christ. Returning to your place, I am head of the host. Come back again. And you don't know which end of yourself is even up. I mean it literally. You do not know whether or not you are encapsulated within a place called Earth, and what you see in the skies is but the atmosphere within a capsule. Or is this particular universe big enough to include Pleiades and you're upside down? God is smart enough to project in his thought manifestation you being right side up and in a pressurized situation, even in a space shuttle built in the United States of America with all its flaws, can pressurize a cabin so that man can walk upright without floating around and bumping his head and having the hairdo flop in the face of the fellow traveler. Wouldn't you think they could get a nice one-piece suit that would contain them? Is spaceman that far ahead of you? No. He's not. Precious ones, and that better scare the living daylights out of you. That is the sort of drivel they give to you, the people, the ones actually perform in skin tight suits. There isn't any lint in the filters, and they can pulverize your Earth. And I'm not talking about space aliens from Pleiades. or Zeta 1, Zeta 2, reticulum. I'm not talking about ones from Orion. I am talking about ones from the United States of America and Soviet Russia. And most of all, England. The next subject is very important because it comes in humble inquiry from Utah, from one who is obviously very indoctrinated in the Mormon religion, finding great discomfort in the contradictions, and actually wanting me to just say, hey, no, this is evil. They've just said you're evil, Mr. Hatton, but now come on and tell me that this bunch is evil. They're not evil. Is your local corner Mason evil? Use your heads. This is used to control man. And I have to go on what I've said all along. Without deviation, without hesitation, I'm of God. I'm not interested in your man-made doctrines. God gave you a set of guidelines, and now they're even carved into stone to last for eternity. And yet, the stone on a manifested illusion will not last into eternity, will it? It will just keep turning up every time it's manifest. Every time God wants to project these same truths to you, He will give you another monument, and sometimes going to be the same one. Because as your illusion dissolves, you will have nothing to fall back on except your spiritual reality. You are moving into reality and away from the lie and the sham of the experience. You must understand it. This is why you have to make a transition as part human into the spiritual, because someone has to put out his hand and say, come on this way. Even if you don't understand it, come on this way. The other way traps you into the illusion from whence you cannot escape. And when you make that transition from that stance and that standpoint, you're going to go into the same ignorance that you have experienced already. Let's not let that happen. But let's go ahead and respond to some of these questions. This man has pored over his books. And I finally, well, actually, Oberle, I do have it a little bit out of order. I'm really not interested, you see, in the one in between. I really am not. But once again, it is another compassionate plea for some understanding about another leader. And so I had to give some time to it too. And this is the one called Maitreya that is supposedly living in physical form in London somewhere. And I honor, I don't care. Maitreya simply means God, Sananda, deity, whatever you want to call it. And yet he supposedly, according to Benjamin Krim, is back and living in London and will manifest himself as the God when he's ready to make that known. So I had dealt with that one in between the prior subject and the Mormon Church. So I guess there's nothing to do but go on now with Maitreya, not meaning to be demeaning to this one or to anyone. Maitreya, I am not going to make your decisions for you. You decide. You must decide what is valid and what is invalid. If it be a physical claiming to be spiritual, it's going to be invalid. Use your guidelines. And that guideline is written within your soul.
Because I want to
to have Dharma be allowed to experience this the same as you once in the room. And I will ask that it be put to print also at some point here. But I don't want to deal with it in print for the paper today, for instance. I want to read along here because I now have a paper that, well, it was sent to me some time back, but I just have not had an opportunity to deal with it. It comes from Canada, and I would just like to take it up. I will read portions of it, then we will comment. I will ask you to stop and think about things as we go. I will tell you that it is about Maitreya and what is projected regarding a being called Maitreya. And I can start off by just giving you some highlights as listed of Maitreya's public emergence, if in fact it would have been truth. I will show you how it cannot be as is projected here, but always ones have to utilize reason in every given situation, always remembering that any being of such high power, if you will, as a god, in the terminology utilized or definition of terminology utilized as we utilize Sananda or God or Creator or any of these other very high referenced labels for deity, they can project themselves in any form they choose. However, you're going to have to keep in mind, and this is going to be a direct contradiction to what you're going to hear now, I tell you as a forerunner come with the Christed being, having arrived at his, quote, goddom. I think that's an interesting term, G-O-D-D-O-M. Isn't that very close to God damn? Isn't that an interesting thought for you to ponder a little bit? It says here that on May 14th, 1982, Benjamin Krim reveals during a press conference in Los Angeles that Maitreya lives in the Asian community in London and challenges the media to invite the world teacher to come forward. The media do not respond. July 31st, 1985, 22 journalists representing the media of East and West gather in the East End of London, hoping for contact with Maitreya or his representative. This belated interest from the media makes it possible at last for Maitreya to take the steps that will finally culminate in his declaration. Well, it doesn't say what happened. August 1987, Benjamin Krim announces that in the coming 3 or 4 months, Maitreya will be working intensively to bring about a breakthrough in international relationships in the world. Less than a month later, in September, the Americans and the Soviets meet, and in December, each an armaments agreement, reach an armaments agreement that no one had thought possible. Beginning in 1988, Maitreya appears, both in person and in dreams, to well-known leaders in various countries and to many ordinary citizens. World detente and the release of tension which ensues allows more open signs of his presence. Manifestations of crosses of light are reported in the American media and are seen by many thousands. On June 11th, Maitreya appears in Nairobi, Kenya, and is photographed addressing thousands of people who instantly recognized him as the Christ. April 1988, one of Maitreya's close associates in the Asian community of London, begins giving interviews to two journalists. Their articles, which are provided to Share International magazine and released to the world's media, outlines Maitreya's teachings and draws attention to world development and events which he expects to take place both in the short and long term. April 1990, a major conference is initiated by Maitreya in London. Some 200 dignitaries from around the world attend, including diplomats, royalty, church leaders, and journalists, all of whom had met with him previously. The general media are invited to attend as observers. About 30 journalists do so. Maitreya speaks of his mission, teachings, and plans. Those attending the conference are invited to return to their respective countries and speak openly about their experience. Wow, that last one really does it, doesn't it? It is not that ones would not be summoned. It is that I want you to listen again. 200 dignitaries from around the world attend, including diplomats, royalty, church leaders, and journalists. Are there only 200 in your world who would go? Is God coming back just to dignitaries, royalty, and church leaders? Does this really sound like something God would do? Well, perhaps. But I don't know of very many leaders, royal or otherwise, who could simply be summoned, nor would they show up. So we have to look at it reasonably, what they mean here. So let us just go now and read from the document. He's back. He has been expected for generations by all of the major religions. Christians know him as the Christ and expect his imminent return. Actually, Christians, as represented here in this terminology, is incorrect. Because Christians, as you have become, are expecting Jesus, the one called Christed. It goes on, and expect his imminent return. The Jews await him as the Messiah. The Hindus look for the coming of Krishna. Buddhists expect him as Maitreya Buddha. The Muslims anticipate the Imam Mahdi. The names may be different, but they all designate the same one, the world teacher, whose personal name is Maitreya. Well, I would suggest that Maitreya does have meaning. It basically has the same meaning as Christ or God or Sananda, but I have to remind you, those terms are terms related to state of being and are not proper names, such as Isu, Jesus, Emmanuel, George, Joe, Sam, or Tut. So your authors, if nothing else, are misinformed. The names, as it says here, represent the same one, the world teacher, and so forth. And it goes on to say that he returns now at the beginning of the age of Aquarius as the teacher and guide for those of every religion and those of no religion. Now that could well be, because as God returns, it certainly is going to be the latter, although the term age of Aquarius is a new age term and is not sent forth of God. That is a coined phrase utilized by New Age movement. Now, It goes on. Concerned primarily about the economic, political, and social imbalances in the world today, do you really think that God would return basically and primarily concerned about economics, politics, and social imbalances? God is interested in your soul. These other things we are sent to attend and point out to you to allow you to know what has come to be and why. Sananda is interested, this God returned, is interested in your soul and your coming into knowledge and balance with the truth of your beingness. It goes on. He will first launch a call to action to save the millions of people who starve to death every year in a world of plenty. No, he will not. God will not. God has come in reference to your souls. And through man, if there is going to be a turnabout and a saving of any millions of people who starve to death every year, man will attend it. He will then show humanity the way to regenerate itself and to anchor brotherhood and peace in the world by creating a civilization based on sharing, justice, and cooperation. His presence is our guarantee that there would be no Third World War. Oh, precious ones. Oh, I'm incensed. I will just go on. Nevertheless, it is humanity itself which must make the required changes and fashion the saner and more just world the Christ will inspire us to create. Well, let us hope that the last statement could in fact be some kind of truth. I just have to go on. We'll discuss this a bit later in the meeting. Information about the Christ's emergence has come primarily from Benjamin Krim, a British artist and exotericist who has been speaking and writing about this event since 1975. According to Krim, Maitreya, the Christ, descended in July 1977 from his ancient retreat in the Himalayas and took up residence in the Asian community of London. There he lives and works as a seemingly ordinary man, his true status known to relatively few. He has been emerging gradually into full public view so as not to infringe humanity's free will. Both in your books of instruction, regardless of the tampering, has come a truth which says, if any man comes proclaiming himself to be Christ and comes in physical format, he is not who he says himself to be. He is false. I suggest all of you go look it up. I'm not going to read any more about it. I'm going to repeat to you that which I have given you over and over and over again. There will be many teachers, some valid, many false. The point is from your teachers, be it Maitreya, be it Ramtha, Mafu, Lazarus, whoever, Sathya Sai Baba, precious ones, I am not here to judge those ones. Each teacher will bring truth, and if teachers bring falseness, It must be you who discerns. I am not come to go down the list and blacklist or gold list teachers. Mine is to bring you information, documentation, and resources where you can go, and if you study, you don't need to ask these questions. Because according to the guidelines as given forth through the generations of time, according to the principles of life, cosmic and universal truth and law, the law of creation and the law of God, you can know. You question me about another one. Question that other one as to why he may be the one. Question Benjamin Krim and require that they put into balance some of the things that are not of the teachings. I'm going to move now into the subject that I really wanted to cover, because I have a reader and he has read, I believe, more than one of the books. But I must first read his letter to you, and I'll briefly do that. And then we will try to take these subjects one at a time and come into some kind of balance, because this one has sent great backup material. It begins, "Dear Hatton, after reading one of your books, I had several questions arise. I was told by one of your followers that your teachings were in compliance with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, to which I am a member. I do not find this to be the case, but would be interested in your response to several basic differences that I ran across. First of all, I respond to that. I would hope that my teachings are in compliance with any truth of God brought forth in any religious order. I find that we even have teachers of ministers. We have Catholic priests. We have ministers of almost all denominations, and they find no exception to what I bring. Therefore, if there is a finding, and you have read all of the material, and you still find contradiction or no explanation for the contradiction in our work, then I am open for further communication. And in this case, although this person has not read and studied at all, I find it a good opportunity to begin to handle some of these religious doctrine questions. I would hope that it does not ruin a friendship. I am not in the religious business. We don't have a doctrine as laid forth for church operations. We don't need mediators. You need the truth, and you need God. And that's all. In one of your journals, I read where Paul was an enemy to Jesus and to his teachings. And they were false, and these teachings would lead us away from the truth. Also, that's exactly right. I don't believe that you will find a single contradiction that says Paul was an arch enemy of Jesus. Paul, in fact, after Jesus quote, end quote, departure from the Holy Land in whatever way. We won't argue ascension or living or death or immortality or anything. We're just going to take the facts, sir. Paul, who was Saul of Tarsus, was a outspoken, miserable, mean enemy of this Christed being, the one often called the Christos, still called the Christos in Spanish and many languages about your world. His name was Isu Emmanuel. It was not Jesus. It was not Jesus. It was not Yeshua. It was Isu Emmanuel. It could have been pronounced according to the language pronunciation in any of these places. But I tell you, it was not Jesus. Jesus was the label appended to that being by Paul after the fact. As Paul traveled through Greece, he began to refer to and call this person that he had encountered and who had been his enemy. He called him Jesus. This is all right. Do you understand? If you call me George, or you call me Ray, or you call me Bob, or you call me Doris, it doesn't matter. I will respond to the energy flow that you produce when you call me. Me, hats on. I can't function exactly like you when I am in the position I'm in at this moment. And therefore, you must understand that I respond to an energy flow, a frequency that summons me. And names as such have very little importance. But look what you have done. You have made the name of this man the important point. If you do not believe on Jesus, you're lost. So what you are doing is saying, I believe in the teachings of Saul of Tarsus, who called himself Paul and named this man Jesus. And you have based your teachings not on Jesus, but on the word as Paul interpreted them to be. And if you are a biblical scholar, you will be able to go back, even if you're not a scholar. But if you listen to the multitudes of interpretations of what Paul might have meant here, and here, and there, you will get as many interpretations as there are people to produce them. This is fact. You can look it up in the historical documents. You see, what you once do is then take this same book that I tell you has been tampered with according to the needs of man. I do not tell you that all of it is invalid, that you should throw it away. I tell you to take each thing and reason it. Who does it serve? What does it serve? You have given me, precious one, for instance, Luke 18:12. I fast twice in the week. I give tithes of all that I possess. What does that mean? What does that mean? Why do you fast? Why did he fast? Give tithes of all that I possess. To whom? To whom do you give these tithes? You are talking of physical. A tithe is physical, usually. It is monetary in value. If you had gold nuggets and you had 10 of them and you gave one of them of equal value to the others away as a tithe, to whom do you give it? It requires another physical being to pick it up and take it. Now let us take the Mormon church, because this is the church in point. I take no exception to that. I just want to know, to whom do you Mormons tithe? What does it merit ye? Do you do it in the secret, quiet places, without anyone knowing? How does one know you tithe? If fact part of the ritual or regulations are close to you if you do not do these things. God chose to accept the widow's mite, and he has said in the Bible to give in secret so that the heart would be in honesty. Is that what is done in the church? Is this what is done in the Episcopal Church, the Pentecostal Church, the Methodist Church? Or do they, as members, ask you to sign a pledge so they can plan their budget? And what is their budget for? It's for God, is it? It is for church building. It is for a kindergarten class. It is for materials. It is for the electric bill of the pastor. I do not object to these things, but don't tell me you are tithing and serving God. You are giving it into the hands of a committee or another man. Do you see? God says he judges by your works. Well, I suppose it works as a work to pull the money from your pocket and give it. And do not misunderstand what I'm saying, because this can be the most worthy gift a person can give. I heard an evangelist pleading for send money, send money, send money. And he said, don't promise God something from your lottery. If you let me win the lottery, I will give you half. It's not what you might have, it's what you do with a dollar and a quarter in your pocket. Well, he's right and he is wrong. It is neither. It is the intent within the heart that has any merit at all to God. If you give from the dollar and a quarter in your pocket in hostility and in expectation of getting reward some way, you see, God asks you to give in expectation of no reward, but the promise is always that you will receive in like manner. And if you give in hostility, you won't receive in gracious love, will you? You will receive in like manner, and perhaps that would be quite stingy in its return.